Welcome to Romecast number 6 with my Thursday co-host, Oz. Oz, welcome to Romecast again.
How are you, Father?
Doing well, thanks. How about you?
I am doing great.
Great. You want to jump in with your stories for the day?
Yes. Well, you know, recently I've been kind of like following some of the, when I call them Catholic news, that are published in the, or the internet. And I'm finding out when I share with people some of what's going on. For example, in particular, when I hear people saying that there are, or I tell them, you know, there are some bishops out there that believe that there's no hell, and that if there's a hell, that there's no one in it. I kind of like find it that they either make a comment to the effect of, well, I have never heard them say that, or, you know, that's not true.
Yeah.
And for me, it's kind of like shocking. And, you know, that the fact that there are so many brothers and sisters in the Catholic faith that don't have the knowledge of what's going on around them. And that led me to a phrase that I heard, according to my notes, I think it was March 15, 2018, maybe after that date. But one of the things that I heard Father Rieperger say was, one of the ironies that's happening more and more is people are saying things like, well, I never heard of it. And my response to it is, wait a minute. Why should your ignorance be the foundation for whether something is reality or not? This is also leading to a problem where people take their limited knowledge of things and they make it the standard whether something is true or not.
That's right.
And this is very dangerous. Now, I, you know, not that I know it all or anything like that, you know, but on the but again, what I'm finding out is that people are unaware of what's happening around them and what's happening within the Catholic, I'm going to call it, community. The as you and Andromeda were talking on Tuesday, there were so many things you guys spoke there, that one of the things that came to mind was not only this, but also what we call in law enforcement, the mental state of awareness. And basically the mental state of awareness is a, it's kind of like a process where you prepare yourself mentally to react to a specific self-defense situation, okay? And before, my understanding is that this was put together by the U.S. Marine Corps during the Second World War in the Pacific Theater. If I'm not, if I'm correct, they named it the Color Codes of Danger. And, you know, has developed through different names throughout the years. And they started with four levels. And now I think they have added an extra level to the color codes of danger. And today they call them the levels of mental state of awareness.
Okay.
The first one is what we call in law enforcement a condition white. This is when the person is basically daydreaming, not paying attention to their surroundings. That is, they're completely oblivious to danger. Okay.
Yep.
An example, they're walking around with their heads down or looking at the iPhone or their cellular phones, etc. Okay. And what happens, the person that has this mental state of awareness believes that everyone is rational, normal, civilized, and no one or nothing is going to hurt them. So they're kind of like going into what is called massive denial. This is not going to happen to me. I'm not going to get burglarized. I'm not going to get robbed, etc. The second level is what they call condition yellow. This is what they call the fundamental level of alertness. And it's basically the preliminary step to prevention and action. You could say you are relaxed but alert. You're looking at what's happening. This is what's going on, etc. The third level is what they call condition yellow. Now you are at a heightened state of alertness, but you maintain your general, I would say, overview of things, what's happening, etc. In police work, that will be like, if I get dispatched to a domestic violence situation, immediately when I get the call, after I write it down or whatever, I will be type of, I will be thinking what I call if then type thinking. So you will go, if this happens, I do this.
That's right.
Which would be great for evangelization. You know, when you're talking to somebody, if you're at that moment encountering somebody, this would be my response. This is a way I can guide them, etc. Now, then the next level is what they call condition red. You have at this level of awareness, you have to be totally concentrated on the threat, and you have to be making rational decisions and handling the situation at hand, okay?
Yeah.
Usually what I have noticed is that your mindset and body language could prevent the confrontation from happening or escalating.
Mm-hmm.
The fifth level is what they call condition black. This is where the person is on blind panic, loss of equilibrium, they're overwhelmed by the decision-making process, etc. Okay, that attitude could result in injury or death. Now, how does that apply to our Catholic world? As I was listening to you guys and looking at the news and conversing with people throughout the years, you know, and it applies. Number one, I can't be oblivious to what's happening. Oh, there's problems out there, but I have to be relaxed but alert. I look at the news. I know this is what's happening. So when somebody tells me, for example, like the example I just gave you, that there's no hell,
mm-hmm.
and if there's a hell, there's nobody in hell, I have to tell them, wait a minute, what did Christ said regarding that? Didn't he say that there was a hell, that there were a bunch of people in it, that yeah. there actually... It is easier to get to hell than to get to heaven, because the pathway was wider to hell than and it was narrower to heaven.
Yeah.
Didn't he say that there were worms eating them alive?
Yeah.
Okay. So I could be with my guard down when I'm home, but once I go outside of my house, once I go outside of my house, then I have to have that relaxed but alertness. And be willing, in my case, I see it as I see Catholics as a great piece, I'm going to call it a piece of land for sowing and evangelizing, because mm-hmm. we Catholics have so much limited knowledge about the faith that's great, because you can go around just talking to even to Catholics and telling them, no, this is the truth. But you have to have that mental state of awareness. And that means that preparedness to be able to evangelize and refute error and converse with them. So you are able to do God's work here.
Yeah, I think that's good. I'll jump in real quick just with something on that. That, you know, it finally, I'm between Denver and Chicago now, as you know, and we had really long winters in both Denver and Chicago. And, you know, once it hit 60 degrees, all the women put on Daisy Duke shorts, and the level of vigilance that men have to just not be, you know, looking, it's almost like we got to look at the ground. And if I were walking through an airport, I'd be walking through, you know, walking into pillars and stuff like that. But there's, I think that's, first of all, just to, you know, make sure that we get to heaven, we have to have what the church fathers call that peaceful vigilance, even before we get to, like, you know, being taught wonky things by priests and bishops. I think we have to have what the church fathers call that peaceful vigilance. As I said with Layla Miller the other day, you know, if men control their eyes, they'll get to heaven. If women control their tongues, they'll get to heaven. But then we also have the additional problem of, you know, there's a lot of families out there that bring their families to Mass, and if they're traveling, they're like, well, I don't know if my kids are going to hear something that's orthodox or heterodox from the pulpit today. And so we can really apply those different levels of those numbers to that. Maybe we'll get to that in a minute. But, I mean, as you explained on the first Romecast, you were kind of at level white for, you know, a good chunk of your Catholic life, right? And then somehow you realize, wow, not only do I have to apply this to law enforcement life, but I even have to become vigilant as far as who I believe in the Catholic Church, right?
That is correct. I like that phrase that you just used. You said this was from the fathers of the church, peaceful vigilance.
Yeah, that's right.
Okay, so this is interesting, because that would be similar to what would be what we call in law enforcement or self-defense condition yellow.
That's what I thought.
It would be relaxed but alert.
Yep, relaxed but alert.
The only the only way you can be relaxed but alert is you have to have knowledge. If you don't have the knowledge to support your relaxation, in quotation, you know, you need to be able to defend yourself, on quotation, right? And we're talking about now spiritual matters here, yeah. or the Catholic faith, but you need to be able to go through the different steps, you know, to defend yourself. And one of them, I think, is gaining the knowledge about the faith, about the Catholic Church, yeah. and how rich it has been for so many thousands of years. And we have a lot of websites where you can find some of these informations. You can have, like, we're recommending the Catechism of St. Pius X. You can have a Douay Rheims Bible, etc. So you start gaining this knowledge about what does the Lord said about different things.
That's
and
right.
I'm not quoting us, I'm quoting Christ. So when right. I tell the person, like one of these person, I told him, but wait a minute, what did Christ say about that? You know, you can hear yeah. the silence is deafening, because he doesn't, he could not answer that and sustain that point of view that there's no hell and that if there's people in here, there's no one. Wait a minute, what did Christ say? Not what us said, what did yeah. Christ say? And that way, I think we become actually more secure in our persons, but mm-hmm. also we're able to evangelize better.
What woke you up, though? I mean, if you were level white, which is lackadaisical, what brought you from level white to yellow or orange or red in your own Catholicism?
I think it was, you know, the grace of God, the Holy Ghost. I mean, it's like I told you at that Mass that I was, and they started whistling during Mass. Something told me at that time, I mean, there's something wrong with this picture. So that led me to start, you know, looking around and reading, etc. You know, it opened up my appetite. But again, I can only say by the grace of God, I go.
And, you know, I just want to make sure I got the levels right. So I want to say something about the white and the black. So white is lackadaisical. There's no problem. Where black is just meltdown material where, I mean, you melt down to the point that you're just decapacitated, right?
Correct. I would say in relationship to the faith would be somebody tells you the example we're using. Mm-hmm. There's no hell. And then you just shut up and go into the corner. You know?
Yeah, or you don't know what to do. Show up in hell.
You don't know what
someone
to say.
Told you. Or you go to hell because nobody told you. I mean, I'm sure that's kind of status black. If you were told by priests, there's really not any chance anybody goes to hell. And then, you know, you go there. But I think, you know, here on Earth, one reason why we have to avoid level white of just being very, very, we call it in English, keeping rose-colored glasses on, meaning that you pretend like everything's okay. And I was a lot happier in my Catholic days when I had my rose-colored glasses on. I wish I were still there, in all honesty.
I agree with you.
But the problem is this. Like, I mean, this is an extreme example that only is going to affect 1% of 1% of 1% of the people out there. But let's say that you thought abuse scandals were just a different diocese, and this would never happen in my diocese or the diocese next door or the diocese my parents raised us in. And then, you know, you find this out, and, you know, it's always the same thing that people say. That priest was really nice and he was really funny. Nobody ever says, well, he was really manly and he was an ex-Marine. I'm really surprised he was caught in abuse. It's always, but he was really nice and he was really funny. And I mean, obviously only 3% of the priests out there are doing things like that. But I think if you go through your Catholic life with that, you know, status of white, which is just lackadaisical, these are the people who leave the faith when they do hear or experience something really bad. Then they go immediately from white to black, which is meltdown, incapacitated is the word I'm looking for, incapacitated. And so I think this really speaks very loudly as to why, again, not that you have to be worried about the priest in your life, but you do have to go through all of Catholic life at every blog post you read, every podcast you listen to. Does this line up with Catholicism that's always been taught? And I guess at the level of priests, like, do I have a gut instinct? He's just a normal dude, that he's a good guy. And when you have that gut instinct, you can go on it where, you know, almost all the guys that I see get busted, especially from the 80s on a lot of these pre-scandal things, they were just, you know, flamboyant and goofy, and nobody knew them and everything. And people liked to go through life just thinking, you know, Father so-and-so was so funny or whatever, and he told us nobody goes to hell, as you said, and things. But it's like, we have to enter into this yellow stage of peaceful vigilance if we want to get our families to heaven.
Correct. But you do have to have the training behind it, because you could be relaxed but alert, but if somebody throws a punch at your face and you can't, you don't know how to block it.
Oh, yeah.
You know, what happened is there's what's called stages of reaction time. Mm-hmm. The stages of reaction time are as follows. You have to perceive the threat. You have to analyze and evaluate that threat. You have to formulate a plan of action and take action. If you perceive the threat, which is a punch going to your face, for example, or somebody saying there's no hell, okay, and that threat is coming, you know, to your face, remember, this could affect your salvation and the salvation of the soul of this person that doesn't believe there's a hell, right?
Yeah.
So the fist is coming at my face, so I perceive it. I look at it and I go, oh, it's a right hand punch coming to my face. It's about to hit me. But then if I don't have a plan of action, but by that plan of action, I have to have already practiced many, many, many times how to raise my left hand and block that one and then counterattack maybe with a punch with my left or a knee spike or whatever, or be able to have that information where I can say, no, that is wrong. What did Jesus say? And that would be my counter, my block and
so
my
what,
counter.
What would you say is the best training then? Because you're right, we can't just, that's the problem with blog posts and podcasters just complain about the problem. Sometimes it doesn't give us the solution. So what is the training? What's the solution?
The training is like you spoke in one of your documents that you wrote, I think was under theology. Mm-hmm. You know, you have to go back to reading sacred scriptures. So if somebody does say something that doesn't go according to sacred scripture, you know that they're wrong.
Yeah.
It's because what happened is in the fight, we make the fight personal. And this fight is not personal, like in self-defense. This is a fight for the kingdom of Christ. This is a fight for the salvation of souls. So when you have that, then you say, wait a minute, I have to block and counterattack. Because you know what have happened to victims that I have worked with when I was in homicide, those that survived, victims that I have, when I work as a detective investigating burglaries, what they usually say is they saw the attack or the robbery in progress or whatever in slow motion. So they actually saw themselves getting hurt in slow motion because they did not have a plan of action. They didn't do any training. In our case, training would be reading the Bible, reading the saints, reading the Catechism of the Council of Trent, or reading the Catechism of St. Pius X, like you said, etc. Yeah. So you have to arm, quote unquote, yourself with knowledge.
Yes,
so
right.
You perceive the threat, you analyze the threat, you say, okay, this is what I'm going to do, this is my plan of action, and then you take action. It's because you actually have something to back that plan of action. Because
that's
if
right.
not, you're going to fight, you're going to flee, or you're going to freeze.
And I want to add something to that training. You know, there's what is the triumph of the Immaculate Heart of Mary? It's one of two things. It's either Christ is going to return in glory, or if you believe the seven ages of the church, we're going to have the great pope and the great monarch and the great council, which many, many prophets say is going to be that council that explains or hammers out more heresies than have ever been in the church. And it really seems like we're kind of at the threshold between the fifth and the sixth age of the church. And most listeners probably don't know I'm talking about that, but we'll get into that another time. Anyway, the point is that if we have this great pope, this great monarch, this great council, if all these prophets say this great council would hammer away more heresies than any time in the past, that means we will have come out, I guess that's what future perfect tense, we will have come out of the worst doctrinal crisis. Well, what is the greatest weapon against heresy? It's Our Lady. She's known as a crusher of heresies. And this is probably why St. Louis de Montfort always says that the rosary is important, but in these last days, the rosary is going to be the most important. And see, that lines up totally with this understanding that in a certain age in the church that we're probably in, there would be more heresies. And so when families say, yeah, we usually get in like a decade of the rosary here or there. I'm like, it's not enough. If you're not saying five decades a day as a family, you guys are going to get smoked by Satan and the culture and all the heresy in the church. You have to be praying at least five decades a day of the Holy Rosary if you want to have any chance at keeping your mind clear. Because this isn't just, see, people think of the rosary as sort of something like that's just sweet and devotional, and we should do it so we can tell all of our, you know, people at our Latin Mass that we're pretty good Catholics. It's like, no. There's so much diabolical disorientation. This is your only immunization against the diabolical disorientation is Our Lady. Remember how we read in St. Maximus the Confessor in the first one? The name Mary in Hebrew means the illuminator. She is mm-hmm. the illuminator of Christ at the cross and Christ's resurrection. And all this confusion when, like you said, even bishops are telling us that, well, hell may or may not exist, or maybe there's nobody in there or whatever else like that. How perfect a timing that Mary and Fatima shows these kids souls in hell. I mean, I can't think of any time in, you know, the previous Marian apparitions. Maybe it's happened a couple times. But what great timing in the century that would deny hell and the century that would actually live through these living hells of the Holocaust and gulags and abortion and child sex slavery and stuff. The rosary is truly our weapon. It's truly our training. And it will illuminate sacred scripture. That's the thing is, I agree with you 100% that we have to really, really know the Bible. But the rosary keeps the Bible illuminated for us, you know?
I mean, I'm glad you mentioned that because I forgot to mention, but I mean, you know, I pray the rosary every day. I actually pray all the joyful, sorrowful, and glorious mysteries every day. I have started that, but
you get all,
you know, because I think it is super important to have that.
That's awesome.
That I think it has actually calmed me down more.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah, right. If you have Our Lady looking out for you, you don't have to be at level red or black, because that's what's beautiful is I notice the same thing. I can think so much clearer when I pray more decades a day. And it's not that God's up there counting or Our Lady's counting, but the more we're wrapped in Our Lady's mantle, the less a diabolical disorientation is going to get into our cerebrums, you know?
Correct.
That's good. Well, I mentioned St. Maximus the Confessor. You got anything else, or should I close with St. Maximus?
You can close with St. Maximus, Father.
All right. Thanks, Ahaz. That was great meditation today. So this is St. Maximus the Confessor, Life of the Virgin, and that's obviously the Blessed Virgin Mary, and it's translated by Shoemaker. Short one today. This is from section 21, St. Maximus the Confessor on the Blessed Virgin Mary. But how complete and concise is the conclusion of the angel's address. Blessed are you among women, that is to say, more than all women, for these women were made worthy of blessing by you, as is man by your son, and even more, the natures of both men and women are blessed by both, by you and your son. And as men and women were punished with the curse, the pain and affliction from both Adam and Eve, so also joy and blessings were spread forth over all by you and your son. But consider the Holy Virgin's intelligent character and her words full of wisdom. She clearly did not resist and was not incredulous, nor did she naively accept the message right away. But at the same time, she surpassed Isaiah in blind and unwarranted obedience, Isaiah 6:8, and also Zechariah in immeasurable skepticism, Zechariah 1:9, 1:19, 1:21, 2:2. She held to the middle way and was greatly troubled, as was appropriate. She was not greatly troubled by the archangel's appearance, for she had become accustomed to his appearance many times when he brought her nourishment in the temple, but by the words that she heard. For this reason, the evangelist also explained and said, she was greatly troubled by the saying and considered what sort of greeting this might be. Luke 1:29. For at the moment she was still unaware of the depth of the mystery, and she trembled at this communion of the divine nature with the human and considered how this might be. But the wondrous messenger Gabriel, although he did not speak with the Virgin, he nevertheless, as if reading the thoughts of her mind, perceived the deliberation in her mind. Not only did he dispel her fear, but he also spread forth joy, and he explained the indescribable birth and said to her, "Fear not, Mary, for you have found favor with God." The favor that she had found was the honor and name of Theotokos. For this she was called, and in truth she became the Theotokos, She in fact found great favor with God, for she became the mother of his only begotten Son. O favor exalted beyond all favors, which the mind cannot fathom, which language cannot describe. Thanks for joining us on Romecast number 6. Sorry about the banging in the background. I'm at some friend's house. They have some construction going on. But do let us know if Skype is working better than the tape-a-call app I've been using. God bless you all. Have a great week.